Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of QSR Uncut. I'm your host, Danny Klein, the editorial director here at QSR, and joined by my colleague and co-host, Ben Coley, editor of QSR. So I'm just going to kind of cut to the chase this week. I am definitely pretty excited about this one. I know Ben agrees. This is actually one of my favorite interviews ever in the restaurant world. Happened in my early days and was with this man, John Taffer. So I don't feel like I need to do a ton of introduction, John. Obviously, for people out there, probably recognize best from Bar Rescue, but also really the driving force behind Taffer's Tavern, which is a very exciting concept. Fits right into what we like to call next-gen casual, which are brands that are really rewriting the rules of full service. And Taffer's Tavern is definitely doing that, from the cooking style to the bar of the future and a lot of things that we'll get into. So, you know, John, thank you so much for joining us. I kind of open the floor here if you want to give us a little background on the concept maybe, and, you know, we'll take it from there.
Sure. You know, about 5 years ago, guys, if you're looking back, it was a different time. The economy was very strong and unemployment was a real low number, and we were really having an issue getting employees into restaurants. And it was a struggle. And now we're having a problem getting employees into restaurants. And you know, when I really think about it, guys, for the past 20 years, we've had issues getting labor into restaurants. So it's an ongoing issue. So about 5 years ago, I said to myself, could I redesign a kitchen that reduces back of the house labor costs by 60%, takes 7 days of training, turns it into 7 hours of training? And could I create a kitchen that solves the issues of human resources that we face today? And we worked in test kitchens for about 2 years, working with frozen product, with sous vide product, with all different types of specs and packaging and preparation styles of products. And we landed on sous vide because sous vide is a Michelin, very, very high-end preparation technique used by Michelin and five-star chefs around the world. And then we designed a kitchen specifically to prepare sous vide products. There's no traditional stove in the kitchen at Taffer's Tavern. There's no hood in Taffer's Tavern. It's all combi ovens, turbo chef ovens, and unique cooking equipment that's designed to finish off all of our sous vide products. Well, as an end result, this all happened and COVID hit. So during COVID, we're doing great. We're selling franchises, we're building restaurants, and we realized during COVID, son of a gun, we have a third of the counter space of a regular casual dining restaurant. Son of a gun, we're not touching this food. It's all wrapped. It's all contactless preparation. Son of a gun, we have 6.5 minute ticket times. We have created probably the safest kitchen in the world. We didn't intend to do that, but it was a byproduct of the work that we've done. So now we have our restaurants up and running. We have five units up and running now. We're about to open in Las Vegas, Alabama, and we're growing. We have 22 more units signed, and we're attaining that labor cost that we wanted to attain. And it's fascinating. You can walk into a Taffer's Tavern kitchen at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night. The place is packed. The kitchen has two people in it. They're not screaming and yelling. It's air conditioned. You could almost carpet the darn place. It's so cool and calm, and the product consistency is wonderful. So we've really mastered and embraced technology in the kitchen and reinventing the kitchen. As an end result, guys, as you can imagine, we have great product consistency. The sous vide gives us great consistency on the way in, and the computerized cooking and the preciseness of the way we cook with infrareds, microwaves, steam, convection, all of these cooking techniques are used sometimes at the same time to finish off our product. We wound up with a consistency as a byproduct that I never imagined would happen. So we really feel that we've mastered the approach of technology in the back of the house. But I think what you'll find interesting about Taffer's Tavern is I was completely resistant to technology in the front of the house. See, I don't believe you can replace connectivity with a tablet. I don't believe you can replace the kind of connections that people have with brands without the human factor. So we created a very connective, dynamic, interactive front of the house with a dynamic staff that connects with you, interacts with you, smiles with you, makes menu recommendations, talks about products with you. And we infused all of our technology in the back of the house. So by doing so, we think we found the perfect mixture Our repeat numbers are fantastic. We're building the relationships with customers that we need to, but we're picking up the efficiencies the technology allows us to in the back of the house. It's been quite a journey, guys.
Yeah, and I have a question. So obviously you're very used to walking into restaurants and bars that are in disarray. You know, and we talk to a lot of operators about the back of the house. That's the hardest thing to staff. I think the most recent report from the NRA was something like, you know, 85% of full service operators are struggling in casual dining to staff the back of the house. You know, and I think one of the reasons for that is, exactly. So I think one of the reasons for that is that a lot of times you go back there and it's just pure chaos, right? You know, it's loud. You can't hear. You mentioned the air conditioners. What have the employees that have come into this, you know, situation, how are they reacting to it? Have they been in other kitchens? Are they saying, wow, you know what, why aren't other people doing this? This is such a better.
It's funny. That is what they're saying. They're saying, wow, I mean, I wish if my last kitchen was like this, I wouldn't have left, is one of them I heard the other day. But yeah, it's a much more pleasant process. The training is much more pleasant. So as an end result, we're not experiencing the turnover that we used to. But you know, it's interesting when you talk about that 85% of restaurants, think about this. Constant turnover in the back of the house. So my managers are where? They're all in the back of the house. They're not in the front of the house. They're in the back of the house because we're training. We have new employees. There's no consistency in the kitchen. We're fighting in the back of the house, so we're ignoring the front of the house. That's what happens in a restaurant business. By simplifying the back of the house, we've allowed our managers to spend their time in the front of the house. And that's a really powerful point that you're making. And I think the greatest residual ramification of this is, of course, less turnover, less training, but far less management burden. It allows my managers to look in customers' eyes more, connect with people more. And again, it enhances that connectivity in the front of the house we wanted while we're using our technology in the back of the house. It's powerful. Yeah. It's not only makes it a lot more enjoyable to work in a kitchen, it makes it a lot more enjoyable to run the restaurant.
Yeah. And you know, Ben has written a lot about this. There's a famous casual dining brand. We don't say who it is, but you know, where they kind of, they wrote this cautionary tale of when they were struggling with labor about 3 or 4 years ago, what they did was they took from the front of the house. So, you know, people walked into the lobby and what they saw, tables weren't getting cleaned fast enough. So they were just turning around, walking away. You know, the hostess was suddenly punching, you know, DoorDash orders into the tablet. You know, they had a job that was now 5 jobs and you went from having X people, there were no bussers, there were no runners, you know, only taking 2 or 3 people out because they couldn't pay that even wage across. And what ended up happening?
They went
a lot of terrible things.
This is no connectivity, which, you know, the most important part of a restaurant is connectivity. You know, connectivity with music, environment, staff, but the human connectivity is always the most powerful element, right? We all go to restaurants that have sort of shitty interiors, not the nicest places we've ever been, but the employees are pretty fantastic. And that gets us back. That's not uncommon.
John, I wanted to talk to you about the growth of the restaurant. One place in particular that you mentioned, Las Vegas, and you know, we were talking to one of your guys earlier before the call here. You know, Las Vegas has been your home for quite a while, so it must be, you know, quite special for you to bring this concept over to Las Vegas. So I was hoping you kind of speak more about that concept coming to your hometown over there. Is there going to be anything special in particular with this particular restaurant? Is it going to be pretty much like the other ones? I just wanted you to speak on, you know, it coming to
you. You know, it's interesting. As a consultant, I've built hundreds and hundreds of restaurants, if not thousands, that aren't my own as a consultant for the 40 some odd years that I've done it. And, you know, when you build one, there's always things that you change when you get to the second and the third one, right? We really didn't have that. Our second and third restaurants were built the same as our first. We're not changing anything in Vegas either. We're going to add a few more specialty cocktails to Vegas, but it's a big restaurant. It's almost 12,000 square feet. So size aside, it's the same decor package, just reapplied, same menu, just reapplied. So we think that we have found a really great formula for success with Taffer's Tavern. So other than menu upgrades and keeping our food and beverages fresh, there's no massive changes that we see for future units. It's working for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One thing we are doing is we've created a smaller unit model. which we're very, very excited about, to go into secondary markets. It's about a 25 to 3,000 square foot model. I should say 1750 to 3,000 square foot model, much lower development cost. But it's everything a Taffer's Tavern is, just in a smaller footprint. Great for like a strip center end cap, right, for situations like that. So we're about to begin selling that smaller version of the franchise. And we're finding a lot of our franchisees who have bought in major markets like Boston or Atlanta are saying, boy, we love the big unit for downtown. How about some smaller units for the suburbs? So we see that as a way to attack a marketplace as well, with a combination of the large flagship unit with some smaller satellite units around it. So we're looking very, very hard at that expansion approach right now, and just about getting ready to start selling that smaller unit.
Right. So I was just going to ask you about the value proposition and sort of how you've, obviously we all know what the world costs these days for us to do anything. Restaurants, no stranger to that lately. But, you know, just from Taffer's Tavern, I mean, what has been sort of the sweet spot in terms of the menu, making sure that those costs make sense? And then, you know, just also on the drink side, you know, what are people looking for? You know, what are they willing to spend, you know, on right now?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We run about 50% beverage sales. I believe we're the only casual dining concept that could say such a thing. Now, I get some of that is because it's Taffer brand. Taffer, I'm known as a beverage guy. So people come, they want to try the products that we do. When you run 50% beverage sales, that's a massive impact on bottom line, as you guys can imagine. When the average casual restaurant does, what, 18 to 20% beverage sales if they're doing pretty good? So that's a huge contributor to the bottom line. But that level of beverage sales also enhances the dining experience. Everybody has cocktails when they eat. It creates a festive environment. It adds an energy, et cetera, to the environment. So our economics are very much enhanced by the bar activity within our concept. We find it's interesting. We find that in as much as people are suffering from the inflationary impact of today's environment, they're still being pretty darn good to themselves. We haven't seen a drop in average check. We haven't seen any shifting in menu items. You know, our short rib is still one of our most popular items. It's one of the more expensive items on our menu. Our spicy chicken sandwich does really, really well, which is sort of a middle priced item on the menu. But we haven't seen any behavior shifts. We haven't seen any reduction in cocktail consumption. So we're sort of waiting for it to happen, but it's not. Now, we're doing some new menu introduction items in the next couple of months. And being sensitive to that, we're introducing a couple of items that we can do at a lower cost so that we can be cost effective and have some price value in certain items within the menu. So we're adding a few more salads, we're adding a few more pasta items, and we're playing with some items like that that we can offer at a better value proposition as we keep getting killed on meat and chicken and fish and all the other prices. But you know what really gets me? And I say this to the entire industry. You know, this consumer is expecting us to increase our prices right now. They get it. They see what's happening in the supermarket. But if chicken is up 14%, don't increase your menu by 30% and take advantage. And some restaurants are doing that right now. Because the consumer has an open mind to price increases, they're going for it. You know what? If our price increase is 15%, raise it 15%, raise it 16 or 17%, don't raise it 30%. And I see some restaurateurs taking advantage of the current state of mind and digging a little too deep. That's not good for the industry. That'll destroy the value proposition for the whole industry if we take it that far. So I'm being very sensitive about that, guys. I'm not allowing my prices to creep up to those kind of levels. I'm very focused on keeping that value proposition.
Yeah, and I'll kind of build on that too. Same idea. I think there are opportunistic operators who view that as a chance to also take advantage of having worse service in their restaurant. You know, I see that now a lot as a consumer. You see some brands, it's like they're almost, you know, daring you to go order them online, you know, because they see it as being more efficient for them. So they've just given up service because they say, well, you know, we don't have labor. Got a sign on the front of the restaurant that says, you know, we're short staffed, bear with us, give you worse experience, you know. And then at the end of the day, at least for me as a consumer, I walk away thinking, was that an excuse? Because if it was, it didn't balance out for me, you know, because I'm not going to come back and say, you know, I get it. I'm willing to have been treated poorly in my time here. You know, let's do it again next week for the twice as much as I spent last year.
It might work short term, but I don't see any way that's a long-term business proposition. That just cannot succeed because the restaurant down the street is going to staff correctly, right? And they are going to do it right, and they're going to get your business. You know, at the end of the day, we're in the business of making people happy, not frustrating them. And I can't believe that a business plan that provides frustration by design can ever succeed in the long term.
Yeah, it's true, but I've talked to people who have said that they are essentially doing that, which scares me a little bit.
It takes advantage of the situation. I agree.
Yeah.
Agree.
Well, you see that in all aspects where, I've brought up on this podcast before, I'll order a couch and it'll take 2 years to show up, and then I'll say, "What did that have to do with the pandemic?" You
Right.
know, but again, it's like it's a moment that you can either take that excuse or you could go the other way.
I was staying in one of the finest hotels in Boston a couple of weeks ago, and I won't say which one. I'll be respectful. And my room service came up, and it's an expensive hotel. My breakfast came up in a cardboard box with disposable silverware. So I opened the box, and I'm trying to get my egg out of this box, and it's slipping off the fork, and the box is too deep. It was a nightmare. I called the GM of the hotel, and I won't say what brand it is, but I said, "When do you become a hotel again? I mean, when do we get back to normal? Are we going to say that, okay, I'm not going to get back to normal. I'm going to operate abnormally forever? Or am I going to try to get back to normal as a life, as an industry, as a person? I want my life to get back to normal. I want my business to get back to normal. Come on, let's do this already, guys. Let's get back to normal. I wish my industry would take that attitude. Let's get back to normal. Let's get our hotels and our situations back to normal." It frustrates me that people are allowing this to cause them to be tentative. And not to be aggressive and not to go back to normalcy. And this tentativeness that I feel out there, you guys asked what the state of the industry is. I'm going to use the word tentative, paused. People aren't as aggressive as they used to be. They're not the problem solvers they used to be. We're all just sort of stung, if you will. And we're not making these steps to get back to normal. Instead, I'm taking steps to stay abnormal. It makes no sense. So I'm not allowing my company to go down that route. We're fighting to be normal. We're not adjusting to being abnormal. And I think the industry needs to take that approach. Or in the end, I think there's going to be a lot less brands out there.
Hey, John, you speak about
Sorry.
Being
No, I totally agree with all of those things. It bothers me to no end.
It's the ultimate excuse, right?
Like the new normal, we got to stop saying that. I can't deal with it anymore. It's not a thing, right? The new normal is the present, right?
Right.
What's the difference?
But the new normal should be the best I can be, not to accept that I'm not the best I can be.
Right. Like, exactly.
So following up on that, John, you speak about, wanting normalcy inside your restaurant, but there are things inside your restaurant that you guys are championing that kind of goes beyond normal and goes into differentiated and unique territory. And you mentioned about you guys being a 50% beverage business, people recognizing you for your involvement with the beverages. And I want to go into the bar of the future aspect of your restaurants, and hopefully you can kind of explain that bar of the future concept to our listeners and how that kind of manifests itself inside of Tapper's Tavern.
The Bar of the Future is a handcrafted bar, I believe, with better ingredients. And, we played with products like Evo that are robotic bartenders, and we've looked at all of these things. But at the end of the day, to me, the bar is the one place where you don't want too much robotics. The bar is the one place where you really need that interaction. So, to us, the Bar of the Future, technically, we have all the equipment, the glass frosters, every piece of equipment you could imagine behind the bar from an equipment standpoint. So I'd say physically with the Bar Future, we have the Taffer Command Station, which is this unbelievable bartending station and such, and finest ingredients and the finest cocktails. But, to me, the word mixology is sort of a dirty word, because if I have mixology, it raises the price by $3 or $4 or $5, but it also increases the production time from 1 minute to 4 minutes. I have a busy bar. I can't spend 4 minutes making every cocktail that comes along. Unless I charge four times the price, I can't take four times the time, Right, guys? That just makes no sense. So you can't charge four times the price. So to me, the bar of the future is incredibly high quality ingredients, apparently handmade, but some ingredients are pre-mixed and pre-set up at the bar. Our juices are fresh squeezed, certain combos of juices are pre-mixed, etc. So it's an efficient approach to mixology. And it's worked very, very effectively for us. There is not one cocktail at Taffer's Tavern that comes out in a standard vessel looking in a standard way. I believe the bar of the future has visual aspects of it that makes every cocktail look exciting and unique unto itself. Nothing looks normal, if you will.
Yeah, I think if you had named it Taffer's...
A better word.
Yeah, yeah. If you have named it Taffer's Speakeasy, it might have been more like what you were saying with the word mixology there, which
I'll tell you a funny story. In our quest to do cocktails, I came up with this concept for browned butter whiskey. And what we did is in a restaurant, I took a big sous vide bag, I filled it with whiskey, poured brown butter in it, sealed it, put it in boiling water for 4 hours, took it out of the boiling water, freezed it, coagulate the butter, coagulates on top, skim the butter off the top, ran it through coffee filters, and it was the most incredible whiskey I ever tasted in my life. And that's our campfire cocktail at Taffer's Tavern. We sell over 1,000 a month of them. And that's an advantage of the cocktail of the future, the way we're working with products, the way we're creating flavor profiles that nobody else is using and going at it in very, very unique ways. That's a cocktail you can't get anyplace else in the world. And when you have one at Taffer's Tavern, it gets you back.
Yeah, and I think that's a key right now to what we were talking about a few minutes ago with the value and what everything costs, is that restaurants have to give you something that you can only get there and you're going to come back for. That's almost what value means to me.
You know, the other aspects of value is don't discount sound, don't discount video. When the music program is right, guys, and your foot is tapping and you're smiling, and or your foot isn't tapping, but the music is creating that romantic environment you like, whatever the concept is, music plays a great part in perceived value. Music makes you have fun or have an energy level in an ambient time. Years ago, when I worked with Rainforest Cafe, we upped the beats per minute of music by 20 minutes and reduced table turns by 12 minutes. I got you to chew quicker with music. I got to turn tail. So beats per minute, all of these elements of music and environment are so often ignored, but they create pace and energy and the dynamics of a restaurant. We have curated music. Every Taffer's Tavern has its own FM radio receiver, and we send out the sound signals to every restaurant with all the audio programs. Nobody picks their own music in a Taffer's Tavern. It's designed beats per minute, hour to hour, content-wise, based on the demographics, music tastes, age, and all the other aspects of each market. Our video system is likewise curated. So you don't see guys sitting behind desks at a Taffer's Tavern on ESPN ever. Everything is active and curated. If it isn't a live game, then it's action in some other type of curated way. These are the things that create perceived value. These are the things that add to length of stay, add to experience. When you leave an experience with great music and great video, it just adds a dynamic of the fun that wants you to come back. And I always say this comically, pick a fine steakhouse. The waiter walks really slow, right, guys? Towel on his arm. Lights are really dim. Go to a Denny's. Waiter walks really fast. Lights are really bright. If you turn those lights up in a steakhouse, that steak isn't worth $60 anymore. If that waiter walks fast in a steakhouse, the perceived value of the steak disintegrates. So many things create perceived value: pace of the staff, energy, lighting levels, music, beats per minute in content, ambient pro. All these things come together to create something special. Guys, 40 years of doing concepts. That's why I think Taffer's Tavern is really special, because all of those pieces came together really well. The music really works. The curated video really works. It creates an energy, a dynamic, the pace of the staff, the connectivity. All these elements come together. Put boring music in there. Staff attitudes change, pace changes, the whole damn thing falls apart. So these are important parts of perceived value that many restaurateurs and even magazines like yours don't talk about as much as you should, is these ambient environments and how much they impact length of stay, spend, and perceived value.
Yeah, so you got to get on that, Ben. You got to
No, it's a good point, guys.
I think it makes a lot of sense, and it's very subtle things that, you know, a lot of, you know, people don't pick up on. You know, it kind of reminds me of you know, all these you know, marketing messages that you know, quick service brands, you know, will put out there. But, you know, that's all good and well. It can be as creative as possible on your TV. It can be catchy. It can be you know, be stuck in your head, the jingle. But like, you got to be, when you get people inside the restaurant, you got to be able to make sure that they want to come back. And like, there's these little things at play, like that John is talking about, that you have to be able to implement in the environment to make people want to come back and do those repeated visits. A lot of things, you know, go into kind of building an experience that, you know, a lot of people don't factor in. And it's fascinating to hear, you know, down to the song choice, you know, how important it is to have all those, you know, things in a row and kind of all adding up to a greater cause of entertaining the guests and having them become loyal.
I can play the song that you heard when you got your first kiss. That's going to create a reaction in you. It is.
Yeah, it is.
You
know, yeah.
I don't want to play music. I want to play reactions. I want to achieve it through music. Right. Yeah. And it's a really important aspect of what we do. And too often it's overlooked.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of makes me think, you know, maybe turn the page back a little bit. 40 years, as you mentioned, consulting on thousands of restaurants opening. What made you decide this was the time? You know, let's go do a concept with my likeness on it, with my name attached to it. I've got all this. I've seen what works. I've seen what doesn't work, you know, as we've all watched you impart onto the world. But, you know, what is the origin story of Taffer's Tavern?
You know, it's interesting, guys. It didn't start with me creating a restaurant. It started with me saying, can I reinvent the kitchen? What can I do? You know, I'm very fortunate because of Bar Rescue and my 40 years of work, I've built a pretty good brand. And that brand has a lot of value to me. So putting my brand on something, particularly a restaurant concept, is pretty darn scary, guys, right? I could blow the whole thing if I don't do this right. Forgive me, I'm getting over a cold here. So it started with reinventing the kitchen, thinking more for clients and such. And then when we came up with this model, I said, you know, what would this concept look like? And we started putting it together. And maybe we're going to present it to a contact. We develop a lot of things here for clients and things. You know, I created a Cheers concept for Paramount years ago that we didn't roll out. I've created a lot of things over the years. So I created this concept. I got so excited about it. I got so excited about the food. I looked at the casual dining sector, and I don't want to mention names, but I looked at the top three or four brands in the casual dining sector. I saw that they were extremely tired, discounting the hell out of their products to stay in business. Their environments weren't getting better. Their franchisees weren't getting better. I saw a really an opportunity to change the game, if you will. And so I pulled the trigger, good timing, guys, right before the pandemic, but we did fine anyway. But it was really an evolutionary process, Jimmy. It wasn't just waking up saying, I'm going to do a concept with my name on it. So once the concept got so good, that's when I chose to put my name on it and do it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's really cool to watch it run, guys, with this new kitchen and how calm it is, and to go there and see people enjoying themselves and everybody has a cocktail, and it's a really cool concept. It feels really good when I'm there, and it just inspires me to build them as quick as I can.
You know, and in one interesting position that you got, what role you're in right now is as franchisor. So now you're relying on, you know, operators, you know, franchisees to be able to run the concept, you know, to their best ability, and you know, that's a big responsibility and a lot of trust, because you know they're running a restaurant with your name on it. So I was hoping you kind of, you know, go into, you know, the franchisee selection process and what standards you're holding to these operators to ensure that you're getting the right people to run these restaurants that has your name out front.
Well, first of all, let's talk about consistency and such. All the product is spec'd by us from a unique provider, Cuisine Solutions. So the product comes in perfectly spec'd, perfectly portioned from our central commissary kitchen working with Cuisine Solutions. Every oven is pre-programmed for the product that it cooks. There is no human element whatsoever. Nobody at the property level can change the programming of those ovens. Only we can do it from corporate. So there's no way the incoming product can be manipulated. It's perfect every time. There's no way the cooking process can be manipulated. It's perfect every time. It's unbelievably, we've eliminated the human factor from purchasing. We've eliminated the human factor from prep. We're not butchering, dicing, slicing. We're not doing any of those things. Our cooks on the line don't even season anything. That's how tight we are. So we've created a concept that somebody without restaurant experience can easily run. Then we've said we're not going to franchise to non-restaurant people. So by creating a system that's this simple that I could teach a non-restaurateur to do in months, we then said, okay, now let's bring in restaurant people to run this thing. So every franchise agreement we've signed is a multi-unit deal, which means they have to have the resources to build multi-units, so they're more substantial, if you will, in asset value, et cetera. They've all operated restaurants before. A great many of them have had previous franchises. For example, our group in Boston owned the rights to Five Guys in Boston. They built it up to, I believe, 14 units, sold their company, and now they're building up Taffer's Tavern. So they had great experience as developers, as operators, as building company value. And those are the kind of franchisees that we're associating ourselves with. So you're right, guys. It's scary to put my name on it. And I picked them very, very carefully. And then I have a great corporate team. You know, everybody says to me, it's incredible. We don't have that many units, but I have a huge corporate team of support here. To make certain that all standards are maintained and everybody is supported.
Yeah, I mean, do you have a sense of how many you think you can build? Do you have like a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan? Is there?
Do about 120 units in 5 years.
Okay, yeah, and that's a good number.
Yeah, not outrageous. A little aggressive, but not outrageous. And we're doing well. We have 22 already, so we're getting there.
I was going to say, Danny, in my mind, like I started thinking about that show, old show Undercover Boss. I don't know if that's still on or not, but I'm just like picturing John, like putting on like a ton of makeup and trying to go into one of his restaurants, like making sure that they're actually what they're supposed to be doing.
I mean, you're right that he would be recognized if he didn't do a ton of makeup. But maybe a mask could be.
I am a source of motivation in my own restaurants. You know, not the John Taffer you see on television, because these people aren't failing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're coming to work every day. Yeah. They're doing a good job. They're working really hard. So I think when they see me, it's a good feeling because I've bonded with all my teams. You know, I spend a lot of time with them. I get that they see me on TV, Danny, so they're scared as hell of me. But once they know me, they're not, right? So I just got to spend time in the restaurants, let them know me. And then again, they're not failures. They're succeeding. So I treat them accordingly and set them up for success.
You know, years ago, I met you in Chicago. They were doing like a bar thing at the NRA show, and you were kind of standing there taking pictures and stuff. And I went up and just, you know, said, hey, we talked like 2 weeks ago, and you gave me a hug. And And I walked away and I'm like, John Taffer just hugged me. I was like, he was way nicer than
I'm a hugger. Like,
yeah. You know, it was definitely, I see what your point is for sure once you kind of get
You know, guys, on Bar Rescue, these people are $400,000 in debt living in their parents' house. You know, they have enough money to make it 3 more weeks. I'm fighting for their lives. So I'm incredibly aggressive, but it's a very unique situation, guys. I mean, if I have 4 days to save their house for them. So it's pretty heavy duty. Yeah, it's pretty heavy duty.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you got a lot on your plate balancing these things these days. I mean, how are you? But I imagine you don't lack for passion in any of them. So what's it like just juggling this all on your plate right now?
It's been, it's a lot. You know, we have a lot of products and things that we're involved in now. But I have a great team, guys. It all comes down to a great team. You know, Sean Walker, the president of my company, does an unbelievable job. I have great human resource marketing people around me, promotions people around me. We have in the back of my offices, we have our own production studios with our own production teams. So I'm surrounded by a great team of people. They make me look good every day. It wasn't always that way, guys. I got to tell you, 5-6 years ago, we struggled with turnover and employees, and it was really hard to find the right people. Finally, after years, we've got an amazing team here. And I actually spent 2 months on my boat a couple months ago, and they handled everything well. Gone. So that's something I could have normally never done.
Where did you go? Did you just float around?
I boat in Stuart, Florida. So I have a boat in Stuart that I go and I'll take it to the islands and stuff.
I've been trying to tell my wife we should retire to Stuart when that day comes, but she's from Orlando, so she keeps telling me never again with Florida. But I keep trying to tell her that Stewart, which I had been to on a road trip once, is nothing like Orlando. They might as well be different states.
It's a quaint town on the water.
Nice. I mean, I want to go there when I'm 70 and drink Coronas with my other 70-year-old friends, and that's going to be my life, whether or not she accepts. Good plan. Before we let you go, John, I want to ask you, just kind of broadly looking at the restaurant industry here. I know we got into some of these things, but if you're just looking at trends, maybe say, you know, what's going to define 2023? You know, what is maybe the broad topic? You know, to me, the word is efficiency and optimization. Those are the two things I think operators need to actually catch their breath and focus on now over maybe innovation. But what do you think is kind of going to be the big topic story here of this year for the industry?
I agree with what you just said. You know, we can't do huge menus anymore. We can't staff 8 or 9 guys in kitchens anymore. We can't have, you know, 2 pages of spec products. The specs are changing on us all the time. We have to be more efficient. We have to be operate in a more condensed way. I think we need to do less and be better at what we choose to do as an industry. I think we're going to see more specialized restaurants that focus in specialized things with more limited menus as we go down the road. I think we're going to find less of the 10-page menus, right, and the 5-page menus. I think that efficiency will continue. But I'm very bullish on the industry because I believe, and we saw this during the pandemic, we do need to look at each other. We do need to go out and be in the same room together. People do desire social interaction. And the one thing that you can't get at home that we can give you as a restaurant is interaction, energy, dynamics, being around other people, the clatter of glassware and plates. There's something very special about a restaurant. What's special about a restaurant is much more than the food. Sometimes the food is marginal, but the experience is fantastic. So I believe that people are always going to crave this interactive experience. I believe that people are always going to crave to be together, to meet together, to have social environments together. That's the great asset that we have as restaurateurs, is the social environments and the experiences that we provide. In that quest for efficiency, we can't lose sight of perceived value and appeal. Appeal, appeal, appeal. I think we need to have a smaller footprint with greater appeal as far as product categories are concerned. And I think that's what we're going to see. But I'm very bullish because I believe as an industry, if we don't allow technology to get between ourselves and our customers, if we continue to maintain the connectivity that built our industry, I think it'll continue to carry our industry.
Yeah, that's why I was talking to an operator recently who I really like, and what she said is the question that they now ask themselves whenever they're coming up with anything is, you know, from a consumer's perspective, like when they're reading through reviews and what have you, what they want to see is, what was the answer to, was it worth it? You know, not because they're going to pay more for it. So, you know, they saw one review one time and it said something like, this has gotten really expensive, but it was worth it. You know, and that was what they're now, that's like their guiding North Star is,
I've said,
create that for, a worth it experience.
I've said it for 40 years, guys, you don't leave a great restaurant and say that was expensive.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Only leave a marginal restaurant and say that was expensive. Right, guys?
Right.
See, we got to up our game. If we don't up our game, then we got to lower our prices. I'd rather up the game than lower the prices.
But, you know, yeah, exactly.
Really good point. You know, one other thing, we talked about video systems and everything before. You know, when I talk to an operator, I say, what is your video system for? He says, well, it's for me to promote other products and stuff. And I say, no, it's to get them back. It's to get people back. We have one job description in Taffer's Tavern. It's 3 words. Every employee has exactly the same job description. Get them back. That's what we do. That is our consciousness. We walk to get them back. We talk to get them back. We cook to get them back. We play music to get them back. The entire concept, the objective of every employee, and if you walked up to any of them and said, what is your objective here tonight? They would tell you to get them back. That's a philosophy that we live by that the industry has sometimes forgotten when we start putting technologies and we start playing with that whole premise of everything we do, everything is to get them back.
I like it.
Yeah, we have to consider putting that on a t-shirt.
I know. I've had them on buttons and stuff for employee programs in the past. It's really, that's what we do. Get them back. Use your smile. Use your food. You know, your food. Use your drink. Get them back.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to someone the other day, 3 times a year frequency, and I thought, you're okay with that?
Yeah, that's cool. You're not gonna get rich that way, guys.
Yeah, you know. But anyway, well, thank you, John, so much for joining us. It's been awesome.
I enjoy talking to you guys. I'll do this anytime. You know, if ever you need a quote or something on that you guys are working on, just let us know.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to be in Atlanta for September for a conference that we're throwing. So we're definitely going to have to check out the location when we're there.
Oh, you know, let me know because I'll set you up with a tour of the kitchens and stuff. I think you guys would really enjoy that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be
incredible. See the kitchen and all the technology and stuff we have in the back of the house. So reach out when you go, and I'll make sure we set that up for you.
All right, sweet. All right, well, thank you, John, so much, and for everybody out there who's listening.
Thanks for your support over the years, guys. I appreciate you, too.
Of course, and we appreciate you all listeners as well, and we'll see you next time.